The Pirate Pig Speaks. The pirate pig speaks in defiance on the chopping block while addressing himself to the man with blood in his beard. The pirate pig says the entire world of Can't Complain Papa fits in one of his missing testicles. The pirate pig says blood is quicker and hotter, the creation of his parts, the bacon, the hams, and pork chops, is the destruction of the ego as a whole. The pirate pig looks out into the world with his one good eye and is misquoted by the rooster making commentary in the dirt. The pirate pig says that life as a barrow is a life without desire. The pirate pig laughs with his whole body and has no trouble distinguishing himself from the roosters and the humans.
Welcome to Poets Cafe. I'm Lois P. Jones, and my guest today is Justin Kibbe. He's the arts and culture editor for The Magazine. Now, that's a Pasadena-based magazine. Welcome, Justin.
Thank you, Lois. I'm very excited to be here.
We're glad to have you. Justin is a poet and also a wonderful visual artist. Now, the poem that you started out with, The Pirate Pig Speaks, has quite a history behind it. First of all, before we get into what the pirate pig is, tell me a little bit about your actual history, where you came from. You grew up on a farm.
I grew up on a dairy farm in New Hampshire. We had 70 cows that were milked, and we had pigs and sheep and chickens and you name it. It was a small, normal New England dairy farm, and each of the four kids was responsible for some part of managing that farm. Our parents trained us from early on how to take care of animals and how to manage the health of those animals, as well as manage the business of running a farm. But we had a unique relationship with our animals. All of our animals had specific names, and we knew our animals by name, despite the fact that they were being raised in some cases for meat or to produce milk for us.
Isn't that difficult to know the animal by name and then have it later for dinner?
It's a little bizarre to think about it now, but growing up, it was the way it was.
Yeah.
We would sit down at the dinner table and we would ask the question, who is this? Referring to who we were eating. And we would know who the animal was.
This was Bill.
That's right. This was Apricot, which was one of the cows that was actually mine growing up. I named her Apricot. And
it's interesting, though. You know, if you think about like some of the older cultures, the Indian cultures, there was sort of a way of honoring the animal by acknowledging it.
Yeah, I think that agriculture has taken a different turn in the last 30, 40 years and become more of a science and less personal.
Right.
And not to go into a history of agriculture in the United States, but at one point, a degree was given called animal husbandry, and that shifted to animal science. And my father was trained under the animal husbandry method. And so the health and the care of all of our animals were essential to our livelihood.
Right.
And it made a very different life to grow up with that sort of a living and to know that these animals were important to us and they deserved to be cared for respectfully while they were alive, even if our end goal was to use them for eating.
Did you ever have a relationship with them when you think, no, I can't really eat this animal, you know, kind of a thing?
I never once had that sort of a response.
It was just part of
my little sister did at one point. She, at some point in high school, my younger sister decided she was going to be a vegetarian, and it kind of created this uproar
in
the family. But
so your animal was the pig?
That's correct. Each of us had a different animal that we raised, and mine ended up being pigs. And I've got hundreds of photographs of me with the pigs, of the first two pigs that I owned, hugging one of the first pigs that I sold before I put it in a grain sack and put it in the back of somebody's pickup.
Mm.
And that pig is actually one of the animals that I knew that sort of created the pirate pig character.
Okay. And now this pirate pig character has different facets to him. He's sort of a dystopian pig, but he's also somewhat philosophical. Talk a little bit about this pirate pig.
You want to know about his character makeup?
Yeah,
yeah.
How did What was the evolution of it? How did you finally go, okay, who is, you know, this character came to you and you said, the pirate pig, and the voice suddenly started speaking, or, you know,
yeah,
how did it come to that?
This poem was the, at this point, I have an entire manuscript built up around the pirate pig and the other animals that he knows and the humans that are involved in this place, and they all kind of live in the same location, and throughout time, a narrative develops based on place more than it does on time. This poem was the first poem that I ever wrote, and so this launched the entire series or the story that came about of it. And for me as a writer, I don't plan a lot about what my characters are going to be. They kind of evolve and become who they are.
Okay.
And that's part of the way that I enjoy writing. If I plan things too much, I'll never write the story or the poem. And so I sit down and I start just trying to figure out what's real. And, you know, so the question is kind of what is the truth? And obviously that's a part of my character, me as a human, that's going into the pirate pig character, that philosophical nature, that who am I? I'm a pig, and I was almost killed because I was a runt, and my mother almost ate me, and I ended up on a manure pile, and then I decided I was going to survive and show them all what was what. And so I grew up on this farm, and I became friends with a young boy who lived on the farm, and I decided I would rule the world. And that's kind of the attitude of the pirate pig.
And here we are in this manure pile called Earth.
That's right.
Because, you know, he kind of takes on these different characters, even political characters. Do you have another poem about him that sort of speaks?
I do. I have another poem that references the pirate pig in terms of how the initial relationship began between the pirate pig and the boy in the story, whose name is Thomas Edgeley Wallace. So this poem is called Autobiography. The inside of the cedar chest in my parents' bedroom is coated in dried blood. My father never washed his wedding night sheets and now stores the holiday china with his crusted delicacy. Mama has an urn of coagulated blood on the back seat of the toilet. She says it's from the first deer she shot when she was 9. She keeps it there for good luck as she reads Field and Stream. On the third day of every month, my sister starts a fire in our backyard. She liberates 3 drops of blood from her ring finger into an outcast frying pan. 1 drop for every time she's claimed independence over Papa. When I turned 6, Papa made me blood brother to a pig. I got 2 cc's of pirate's blood, and he got 2 of mine.
That's scary. and it's entitled Autobiography, right?
Yes.
But, of course, this is the autobiography of the character.
That's right.
You know, it's difficult as a listener not to make the correlation between you and this character. But, of course, we know that can't be true because our characters, as you said, invent themselves and they have their own lives. But you happen to have this background, which sort of steeps itself in actual experience.
Right.
These
and
animals.
Out of respect for my mother and my father and my sisters, don't call them and ask them if this is true.
Because Have they read
it? My sister has read this poem, and she's a poet as well, and she definitely appreciates that idea of writing about your childhood and trying to create a new world out of it, or try to somehow express the emotional truth of that experience through poetry, because the factual truth of experiences is always lost in the communication between two people. And
that's
so
right.
The writing of a poem for me is that attempt to translate my experience into some relative piece of communication that somebody else will both find, will get some similar germ of experience out of. Because to me, growing up on that farm wasn't a horrible way of living. It was a way of life.
Yes, and you have created this whole new world, and the world has come through not only in poetry, but some of your visual art. Unfortunately, you can't see some of these fantastic pieces that Just has created, but you might speak a little bit about that.
So formally, the idea came to me as I was working a 9-to-5 job in front of a computer, and I didn't want to write poetry on a computer anymore. And so as I was trying to make this world come alive, I started to work more into the visual art realm. And I'm a very inventive person, and I mm-hmm. credit both my mother and father for that. My father, as a farmer, had to be a creative person. They both did. They were both farmers, and their creativity, though they say they didn't teach it to me, I know that I had to have learned it from them. So I wanted to create poems, and I wanted to use formal poems, but I didn't want to use a sestina or a villanelle, so I started to look at visual forms that I could take advantage of and turn into a poem or think about as a poet as I go through. And so I created pseudo-military documents and telegrams and maps and other assorted ephemera, and as I constructed them or put words into them, created them as poems. And so one of those pseudo-military documents is called a Daily Philosophical Findings Report.
Yeah, that is fantastic. Again, it has a sort of kind of dystopian flavor to it, but it's very, just a very original view, sort of mythical universe that you've created. Now, you have an actual physical map where these reports can be found.
Correct.
And this society no longer exists, correct?
Correct.
Okay, and someone was coming along and doing an investigation on the site and found these reports.
That's right. I call it fictional archaeology as a way of telling a story. So
yes.
The maps are there. They have all their locations, and through the different points on the map, you can find out where these different poems or these archaeological facts have been found.
These are fantastic. They look like very official reports. They have stamps and, you know, something you might find in any government organization. Why don't you go ahead and read something from the report? We get a little bit of a flavor of what this is about.
So this is it's from the Kingdom of Festive Mothers area of the map, and it's a Daily Philosophical Findings Report. I'm going to read from the object versifications, where the instructions say to be detailed as you have time for more. The pendulum swings forward, backward, up, down, over and over, and should it ever stop, the clock would stop, the world will end. Anyone who focuses their life efforts on change, on forcing the pendulum to move faster or slower in either direction, wastes their life. Of course, that role too feeds the contradictory acclaim, the conflicting components of existence. So many rabbit trails on this hill of beans, and all lead necessarily somewhere, but perhaps without any other purpose than to be on the move, like the chicken chasing its tail. To spend one's life repeatedly running back and forth along the same rabbit trail, paving its surface, making it easier for others, thousands of others, to also travel your rabbit trail, that you've even labored to erect a signpost to identify it, humbly, of course, as yours, that inevitably was initially only built to get you from point A to point B and not back again, is paramount to insanity. Well, but I am a peasant. I think like a peasant. To me, politics is nothing more than the realm where humans can study themselves as animals, the way an environmentalist studies the behaviors of lemming. An individual's actions are far less important than their actions as a species. Beneath our conscious desire to survive individually is the more potent desire to survive as a species, and below that, to survive no matter form, which is how the human tendency to self-destruct is explained.
That's brilliant. So these characters really allow you to sort of voice these various opinions, philosophical opinions on life.
Absolutely. I think the desire or the attraction to being a poet is similar to the, for me at least, in the desire to create a character and that ability to jump into somebody else's shoes, somebody drastically different from myself, mm-hmm. as including not just another human, but another animal, and to like try to look at life from the perspective of that individual, no matter what species, and question what is the point of all of this, which is what literature is all about. And so that, I think, as a philosophical poet in person, that allows me a lot of freedom to explore things that I would be uncomfortable exploring through my one brain that I tend to live this life.
And it also prevents you from being didactic too, because you're able to enliven this character with a viewpoint and allow people to have a perspective without you sounding preachy yourself with your own, you know, poetry, which I really love, and I love the depth of the character. And now you have this map and you have these various reports that you can find in different locations. And are there also some physical objects that are connected with this?
There are many, many physical objects connected with all of it. Probably about 40% of them have been finished, and I have another 60% that I'm still working on, either finishing the poems or applying those poems to visual surfaces. Some of them I've burned onto skulls of various animals or into bones of animals. Others are being hammered with like a die and a hammer into different pieces of metal so that the poems exist on these various forms. And so it will be impossible to put them into any form of book in that way. They'll have to
be an exhibit, part of an exhibit. Or
yeah, absolutely.
And very interactive too, because I know that you enjoy people actually picking them up, touching them. You're not worried about, oh, this is my art and don't touch it. But, you know, you really want people to be familiar with the surface on what you've done.
As I created the book of military documents, each of the three characters that types out the military documents has typed them onto a very different computer or typewriter, not a computer. And as I was working on these, I had to go to my friends' houses who have typewriters and work on it. And throughout the process, their kids were running around and stepping on the papers. And I'm like, that's fine. That's a part of the creative process. It's going to add life to the documents themselves. And then it causes me to look at a three-year-old footprint that's on my document and incorporate into the document itself why that footprint's there. everything becomes a part of the end.
It's very impromptu in a way, the way it's sort of happening as it, you know, unfolding as it happens and you're documenting it. And also, part of that I've noticed is your willingness or your desire to have poetry connect with people in a live sense rather than make it kind of removed. Like, for example, in a recent poetry festival, I know you had your car spray-painted white and you had people writing poems on your car.
Yeah, that's definitely a big part of what I think is important as a poet. I've always wanted to engage people with my poetry and get people to read it that wouldn't necessarily want to. And whether we like it or not, you say the word poetry and 90% of the people you come in contact with are going to try to run away as fast as you can. But if you don't call it poetry, if you spray paint it onto a car and you park it in a parking lot, you'll get any number of people coming up and reading your car. I come out of a grocery store and I have great conversations with people I would never meet at any other time because I have all these poems in five different languages at this point that are written on my car. So the ability to reach other people, and that's what being human is about. It's about contact and communication with others. And my desire to be a poet is an attempt to have an honest connection with other people and to relay some sort of emotional and truth about what I've experienced with other people. So if I can do it on a car, that's great. Or any number of other things.
On a vest or on a skull or...
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and it's wonderful. I was reading an article, in fact, yesterday, there's a woman on Plowshare. She's really trying to get people more involved in poetry and get them to talk about how it can become more of a popular art. And, of course, there are academics on there that are resisting. You know, we don't want to sell out and we're sort of... you know, we don't want to feel that we have to market our poetry in order to make it accessible. And she said, that's not the point. It's how do we connect with the public so that it becomes real to them? So what you're doing is actually really that specifically, you know, you're making that contact with people so that they become curious about what it is, and they can have a conversation about it rather than being sort of in this lofty hall and writing words and only getting acknowledged really from other poets.
Yeah, I think there's I don't think any poet decides to become a poet to make money out of it. Mm-hmm. We, of course, we love it when people read what we write. And there's something that, at least inside me, I've worked in the marketing business and I've been a poet, and I can think about how to market my poetry. But like, the two brains don't really like each other. And so for me, when I enter that poet space, it's this idea of I'm home. Here's a place where I can be who I am. I can write what I write. And if other people find enjoyment in it, then great. Mm-hmm. And then the other side of me comes in where I want to interact with people, and I start going, okay, where can I put a poem that somebody's going to find it? And I don't even care if they know it was me that put it there, mm-hmm. or that, I mean, what they do with it once they've experienced it or encountered it is entirely up to them. Mm-hmm. But it's that idea of placing a poem somewhere where somebody won't even know it's a poet or know it's a poem, and it's going to affect their day, their life, in some way that I won't know.
Mm, it's a beautiful idea, actually. Because you wonder sometimes, you know, how your poetry ripples out there. You don't really know what effect it has. Even with our show, we have listeners, our wonderful listeners, who sometimes we hear from and sometimes we don't, but we know that somebody is listening out there, and it is experiencing it in their own way. And that's the personal aspect of the art. How do you, I know you're working on various projects right now, and you've just received some funding for a specific project. Is it the one that you're working on with the Pirate Pig, or is that something separate?
It's something separate. Okay. It's a manuscript called Elite Speaking Turquoise Monkey.
okay.
And it started as a challenge that I gave myself. I decided I was going to see what sort of poetry I could write if I limited myself to only using text message acronyms.
Wow.
So it had to be said in an acronym, and I used an online dictionary, netlingo.com, that updates it regularly. It was initially created to inform parents and teachers so they would know what their teenagers were saying through text messages. So now I have these text message poems in acronym and English, and the grant that I got from the city of Pasadena is to translate those again into American Sign Language and video them. So I'm working with a variety of people, filmmakers, sign language speakers, to help me translate that and produce that, and we'll see what comes of it. I'm incredibly excited. I also have a friend who's translating it into Braille. So the goal is to actually have a book that is text message English and Braille translations of both. So it's a hybrid book with both something someone who is sighted can read and somebody who is non-sighted can read.
You don't happen to have an example here
of one of those poems?
Yeah.
No, I don't.
That's okay. Sorry, we didn't plan that. Next time.
I was trying to see which one I could remember, and I will butcher it if I try.
Oh, that's okay. But now this is conceptual writing, and are we able to, do you feel that it somehow evokes an emotional response? The idea of acronyms being placed together, how does that translate over into
sign language?
Not only sign language, which is another fantastic medium, you know, way of getting the poetry into another universe or realm, but how does the acronym itself translate into poetry? How does it? How would I receive it? You know, it's conceptually difficult for me to understand exactly what it is.
Yeah, I think conceptual art is definitely, and writing is something I'm very fascinated. A few people will be able to read the text acronym poem and know exactly what it means. I think most people will be more fascinated between comparing the English and the acronym version.
Okay.
In terms of what can be said. For me, I think the text acronym is a strange part of language because it's a visual language. Unlike most languages, it is meant to be seen and not heard. Any form of text acronym is meant to communicate something to one part of the population and hide that same meaning from another part of the population. Mm-hmm. So it creates this really interesting dichotomy of trying to communicate and trying to hide what's being communicated. So there's a form of code that's happening. And it's being produced and it's changing all the time, and it's affected by a part of the population that is largely not given a voice. And the largest part of that population is the tweens. They're coming of age, they're dealing with all these emotions and these questions about life, and they're trying to talk to each other about what they're saying. But you also have sexual predators that are using text acronyms as a way of trying to reach tweens potentially, or as a way of illegally or legally trying to obtain sex. And you get all these different blends of the sub-demographics creating this language, and you put it together, and the emotion that comes out of it is almost one that it either horrifies or it really amuses people. And I hope at some level it's also going to spark a little bit of that philosophical nature that allows them to go, what is going on with this language? And what is going on with these sub-demographics of the population? Because they're ones that most people don't want to acknowledge that exist. Teens are more or less shut down, and they're like, okay, they're just teenagers. But they have important things to say. Some of the best poets throughout history have written their most famous poetry before they were 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
These are amazing people at this age that have incredible knowledge, and I'm fascinated by a language that they're largely responsible for helping produce.
Yes, I know, I see. Okay, so it's really sort of inventing a new language and a new way to communicate.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. And this is going to be translated into sign language for the deaf community.
Which is another language that's meant to be seen and not heard, which was why I thought it was interesting to take the text acronym meant to be seen and not heard and put it in sign language, which is meant to be seen and not heard.
Exactly. And so you have another manifestation, actually. Justin, it's been great to have you here. Please take us out with one of your poems.
All right. Here's Jealousy of Roosters. We like pigs, fate you in the pink, blooming bread, flower, sow, foal, and other stages of sexual excitement. Fat laughing, fond gristle, the fair chicken hoof discarded with the head. We like pigs, being born under the male myth of superiority, the less than lucky 99%, the damp plucked feathers, 50 gallons of succulent entrails. Our wide-wing nostrils quaff their cups of joy. The friend, sauce-stained and unsolicited, we endure is by our side, and the foes we love before us, everything is hoity-toity. In our mouths, a peep of gold, ambition toiled from earth's privates. Desire will get us everywhere. We like pork. You're a pork chop.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Lois.
Oh, fantastic. Justin Kibbe, for being on the show, creating new worlds. I'm Lois B. Jones, and my guest has been Justin Kibbe. Look for the Poets Cafe fan page on Facebook. You've been listening to Poets Cafe on KPFK, Pacifica Radio, for all of Southern California and beyond.